Blog Talk Radio.
Attention! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard! Keep your arms and legs on the inside at all times. Hold on tight! The show is about to begin.
Welcome, everyone, to our latest and greatest The Coaching Chicks podcast. This is Ashley Ross, and I am your host today. And I am so pleased to have one of our friends and partners with us to discuss a very serious topic, and that is bankruptcy. And Robert Pope is going to join us as we talk about this topic that I think we never want to discuss, but I think it's important to have the education, especially as a real estate professional. So let me bring Robert in. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Ashley.
Okay. So I know that you've been successfully practicing law in the D.C. metro area for over 13 years. And I know that you have a Bachelor of Science in Marketing Management. So how do you span this going from marketing management to being a practicing lawyer? Tell me a little bit about this.
From graduating in from Virginia Tech and with a marketing degree, what I ended up realizing toward the end of my degree was that none of the jobs that I saw in the marketing field appeared to be something I was interested in. And so I started considering graduate school options and looked into law school. And it turned out that that was something that I did well at and enjoy, and it's provided a great career, and I still am able to use my marketing knowledge to help companies that I work with not only their legal needs, but marketing as well as marketing myself and my practice.
Well, I can see that that would be of great benefit. You know, my dad always told me everything's a business. So having a business background of any sort will help you get ahead in life. You have most certainly made that happen for yourself. You know, we do a lot together when it comes to doing seminars and workshops for the Coaching Chicks for our real estate professionals. How did you get into working with the residential and commercial real estate?
The second job that I had after law school was working with a sort of general practice but also real estate focused firm in Old Town Alexandria, and I learned a lot from the gentleman that started that firm. He's been practicing law and focusing on real estate since pretty much before we landed on the moon. And so I had several years where I worked with him and was able to learn a great deal from him, and then each one of my jobs that I've had since then up to the current status where I've opened my own firm has been at least focused to some degree on real estate, be it residential or commercial as well. I've focused mostly on residential, but I've also done commercial real estate over the years.
Excellent. Well, it's always good for all of our audience to understand that, you know what you're talking about, and you can address their knowledge needs, their educational needs when it comes to working with real estate. So thank you for that. So let's get back into our topic, bankruptcy. You know, I know that it's become a very hot topic it's always been a hot topic, but in the last 5 years since we've had, probably 7 years, I was living in Phoenix when the real estate market started going bursting, and it's kind of been all across the country, honestly, and a lot of people have had to file bankruptcy because of the financial times. So tell me, how does this have a last?
Sorry, Ashley?
And it's right in my head. So I've done a couple credit shows lately. And what I've heard is that it's really hard to get those numbers up. So how long does it take to recover after you file for a bankruptcy?
Well, generally speaking, you do hear a lot about, bankruptcy stays on your credit for anywhere from 7 to 10 years, depending on which news article that you come across. The reality is, and I've talked to, probably probably a dozen or so loan officers over the last few years and confirming this, but within 3 years of rebuilding your credit after having filed bankruptcy, a bankruptcy debtor can qualify for most conventional mortgage programs at competitive interest rates. Now, this doesn't mean that if you have the same problems after filing bankruptcy that you had before, if you just redig the same credit hole that you were in, you're not going to be able to qualify for a mortgage any easier than if you hadn't filed for bankruptcy. But as long as you take the opportunity to have a fresh start that bankruptcy provides and you focus on rebuilding credit and, you know, you get a credit card, you pay it off in full each month, that kind of thing to get the numbers up, most of the time, within 3 years, you can get a conventional loan. And one of the services that I use in filing bankruptcy for clients, it actually will compare their current score and credit score with what they will estimated have after 1 year from their bankruptcy discharge, and usually it's like 100 points higher after a year from your bankruptcy discharge.
Okay, so that's not so overwhelmingly dire that you'll never be able to have another car or another house or to have a credit card for that vacation ever again. And I guess we should go back a step. In your experience, what are the main reasons, or why do people come for bankruptcy? You know, I think of bankruptcy as somebody who has a small business, but that's not always the case.
No, it depends. I mean, there are any number of reasons. Most commonly, I will see, you know, people that had difficulty during the recession, and, you know, perhaps they relied on their credit cards to make up the income reduction that they had. And now they're perhaps back on their feet, their income is back where it was, but it's extremely difficult to pay off, you know, $30,000-$40,000 in credit card bills that one might have amassed during that slow period. Also, medical bills is another common thing that I run into. I had one bankruptcy client whose one of their children had huge medical bills that were racked up, and due to one reason or another during the recession, they didn't have the kind of coverage they had hoped to have for health insurance, and they had huge medical bills that were very difficult to get out from under, and that was something that can be discharged in a bankruptcy. Comparatively, I haven't done a whole lot of small business failing bankruptcies over the years. It's more often just been people that have regular jobs and for whatever reason have just been caught behind and need a way to be able to dig themselves out without spending the next 30 years basically working to pay off the interest.
Right, absolutely. So we're not talking about, as a general rule, somebody who's, you know, frivolous and out there just spending credit cards and building it up. We're talking about people that are trying to survive, trying to do the right thing, and they get behind. And I think that's important to mention here.
Certainly.
Sorry. And so once you do file, and what is the process for filing a bankruptcy?
Well, the way I do it is I have the person come in and sit down with me, and we talk about what the circumstances are and figure out if it's the right option for them. Bankruptcy isn't the right option for everybody for a number of reasons, but more often than not, I find that their circumstances do allow for them to file bankruptcy, and then we discuss what the filing fee is, and depending on the circumstances, you know, I don't charge a standard rate. I have a different scale depending on the complexity of the situation. But then once we get started with that, what I have clients do is they'll fill out a bunch of documentation online, and I use software in order to prepare all the forms that are necessary to file, because in order to file bankruptcy, you have to have a very comprehensive list of all of your debts, assets, income, and expenses, so that that way the court can judge whether or not, you know, you've got the income to potentially pay off your debts reasonably. I mean, they don't look at it and say, okay, yeah, you do have $10 extra every month. Why can't you just use that and pay off your credit cards? I mean, they're reasonable with it, but they want to make sure that people aren't abusing the system too. So they're not going to have someone that's making, you know, six figures and up and only has $10,000 in credit cards. They're not going to look favorably on them filing for bankruptcy because they could reasonably pay it off. But that's what the process is. They go through and fill out all this documentation. I pull their credit as well, so I make sure to catch all of the creditors. And then once we put all the documents together, then we file, and the court takes it over from there. After that point, the only thing that the debtor usually has to do is appear for one brief hearing in court where the bankruptcy trustee asks a bunch of questions, basically confirming everything they put in the schedules and documents in the first place under oath. And 99% of the time, that's the last time that the debtor has to have anything whatsoever to do with the court. And about 90 days later, they get a discharge in the mail, and then they're able to start rebuilding their credit.
Okay, great. Well, that's not so bad. That's not a you know, 6 month or a year, you know, process where you just drag it out. It's just very painful. But how do you go about rebuilding your credit after that bankruptcy?
Well, one thing that I've found is almost all of my clients have found this and been surprised. Even if I tell them in advance it's going to happen. All the clients, they end up filing for bankruptcy, and before it's even discharged, they start seeing pre-approved credit offers and even pre-approved car loan offers coming in the mail, and they'll usually contact me at some point and basically kind of ask, you know, did we really file? What's going on here? Is this some kind of error about this? And I'm explaining to them that no, that's actually very common, because filing for bankruptcy is something that you know, people that want to give out credit, creditors, you know, car loan companies, that sort of thing, they can look and find out, okay, this person does have reasonable income and they could possibly pay for this credit if it's extended to them.
Okay, so that makes no sense. If you got into trouble with the credit already and you've already damaged your card, who's going to give, you know, as you put in the questions, what idiot's going to give another credit card?
Yes, exactly. And that's a common question. And the way I explain it to people, a couple of things happen after you file bankruptcy that actually makes it a lot, makes you a good credit risk comparatively. All right. First, you can only file bankruptcy every 8 years. Okay. Once you file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, you can't file another Chapter 7 for 8 years. So a potential creditor knows they have you on the hook for at least that long. Second, a large part of your credit score is how much outstanding debt you have. By filing bankruptcy, you're wiping out most, if not all, of your outstanding debt, especially all of the unsecured debts like credit cards, medical bills, that sort of thing. So as I said, comparatively, you're a great credit risk after filing for bankruptcy, even though it doesn't seem that way on the surface.
Interesting. And it's always the question to me of, you know, I have these credit cards. I need to build my credit score so I can actually get a big purchase like a house or a car. So how do I build that credit score when I get these credit cards?
Well, commonly what you do is just follow the advice that you see online all the time or in the news, where what you want to do is charge a few things on there, pay it off, charge a few things, pay it off, make sure that you don't get back in the situation where you max it out and then you're paying just interest every month, because the credit score increases if you use credit responsibly like that and you don't get back in the same hole that you were in before. So that's the gist of it, is just make sure first, you know, whatever amount that you pay on the credit card each month, you know, heaven forbid, just make sure you're not late. But mainly, you know, use it for a few things. I mean, I've found that sometimes clients will, for instance, set up their cell phone bill on auto pay on that card, and then they just pay it off. So functionally, they don't pay any extra for it, but now it's helping their credit too. As long as you pay it off within the grace period, there's no interest charged. So that's one strategy that I've seen some clients use, is to set up auto pays on that card and then just pay it off right away.
Okay. Well, I can see that, because they do say, you know, you do need to use your cards. Having a card and having a zero balance does not build your credit, so I've read. Not being a credit expert, but that's what I read online. And so I file for bankruptcy, and I have these new credit cards. Are there educational sources or is there an outreach program that you provide or that is provided by a bankruptcy court or very specific? Because a lot of these things, these educational sources are trying to sell me.
Right. In the process of filing for bankruptcy, there are actually two courses that you take on credit awareness and making sure that a debtor is educated about how credit works and how budgeting works so that they do use this as a fresh start and don't get in the same habits they were in before that might have gotten them in trouble to begin with. Both before filing and after filing bankruptcy, the court requires that debtors take a credit counseling course. And each one of the courses teaches slightly different things, but the gist of it is they want to make sure that they explain how credit works and what kinds of things will help people rebuild their credit. And they'll often, I believe the second course has a component in it that helps them figure out a budget so that they can make sure that they're not living beyond their means. They won't use these new credit cards in order to simply pay their unreasonably high eating out habits, that sort of thing. So there is education that is built into the process by the court.
Okay, that's reassuring. Because I think relying on some of the information out there on the net, as soon as you click on one of those, someone's hounding you, saying, hey, sign up here and we'll help you manage. But not all of those people are reputable or out there for your best interest. So, I think it pays to have some education that you can trust. So what I've always been confused about, I go into bankruptcy, I have a house, I have a car, I have a bank account, I have a savings, I have a 401k, I have various resources. Don't I have to give up those assets in order to pay off my debt?
Not always, and in fact, in my experience, having filed probably 100, 150 or so of these over the last several years, I have almost never had a single client have to give up any assets in the process. And this is for a couple of reasons. First of all, there are dozens of exemptions built into the law that cover things such as wearing apparel, your clothes, household furnishings, pets. If you're like a mechanic, they cover tools of the trade. There's a specific exemption for a motor vehicle. And this is, of course, per debtor as well, so that if you've got a husband and wife, they can basically double their exemptions. Another thing that is exempt, you mentioned 401ks. Retirement accounts that are protected in one way or another by some kind of tax deferred status, like IRAs, for instance, count as well. If it is a retirement account like that, it is specifically exempted from creditor access and therefore protected in bankruptcy. I had a client who had six figures in a 401k, did not have to liquidate any of that in her Chapter 7 filing because it was exempt. One of the things that always just I cringe when I hear it is I'll have a client come in and sit down with me and we're talking about their bankruptcy filing and I ask them about what their asset status is. And one of the things that I hear a lot is, well, I had a 401k, but I cashed it out in order to try and get caught up on my credit cards. And that's where I'm just smacking my head and thinking, I wish that people knew about this because you don't have to liquidate your retirement in order to get a fresh start from your credit cards. Now, another thing that makes assets protected when you talk about houses and cars especially, if you owe more than the asset is worth, then it's there's no equity in the asset to provide any kind of money for your creditors in a bankruptcy. So like if you have a car that's worth $15,000 and you owe $18,000 on it, then there's no equity for a creditor to pursue. If the bankruptcy trustee were to sell that asset, there would be nothing extra for the creditors. And in the same way that I mentioned the motor vehicle exemption earlier, that can cover a chunk of equity in that asset. So now let's reverse it. Let's say it's worth $18,000 and you only owe $15,000 on it. Well, that $3,000 in equity is protected by that motor vehicle exemption. And the same thing works for houses as well. The only thing is, depending on the state that you're in, and Virginia is where I do the vast majority of this, there is a very small exemption for equity in a home. So most of the time, unless clients have very specific debt situations that I can, you know, go over on a case-by-case basis with clients, most of the time, if someone has a decent amount of equity in their home, I'm not going to recommend they file for bankruptcy, because it's going to be difficult for them to protect that equity in the process. But that being said, you know, most of the time with the real estate market the way it went, you don't see a whole lot of people that have a ton of equity in their home that are looking at filing for bankruptcy. You know, more often than not, people are underwater, if anything. And then that's, again, not even an asset for the purposes of the bankruptcy. So, like I said, I've had very few. I think I can only think of one off the top of my head, and it was a very unique situation where she had to give up one asset in order to protect another asset. But she didn't have a problem with that because she was giving up an asset worth, I think it was maybe $2,000, and she was getting rid of nearly six figures in unsecured debt. So from that perspective, it was a no-brainer for her, and she didn't mind losing that asset at all in order to get that fresh start.
Absolutely. So what I hear is that really every bankruptcy is a very unique, customized, and individual process. Is that correct?
Yes. There's a standardized procedure for filing it. However, there are enough distinguishing characteristics from client to client that while bankruptcy is one of those things that people can and sometimes do file on their own behalf, I would recommend that there are just too many ways that it can go wrong for someone to not involve an attorney in the process. And to a single client, I have not had anybody come to me after filing for bankruptcy that has regretted the decision afterwards. To the contrary, a lot of the positive reviews I have online are from bankruptcy clients who are enjoying this fresh start that they've received through the process. I've been out at the store and I've had a client come up to me saying, hey, you know, it's great. It's been like 2 years since my bankruptcy and now I was able to get a new car and I'm saving up to buy a house. And everyone, you know, I have not had anybody, I kid you not, regret having filed for bankruptcy over this time. So it is not the scarlet letter that people think it is based on what the news says online. And in all honesty, a lot of those articles that are saying how much bankruptcy damages your credit and makes it difficult to ever buy a house again, those are probably provided mm-hmm. by the credit card companies because they know they won't get anything in a Chapter 7 bankruptcy filing.
Wow. Interesting. So, you know, a lot of the people that we work with are in the real estate profession. And while this can apply to them on a personal or professional level, tell me, what should a real estate professional say to a client who comes to them, says, you know, I had a bankruptcy, I really love this house, I just don't know if I qualify, or what should I do next? So can you tell me a little bit about your experience with that?
Well, the key point here is, in terms of buyers wanting to purchase a home after having filed for bankruptcy, that key figure that I've heard from multiple loan officers is 3 years from discharge. What I would recommend people do is, if they are interested in buying a house, and let's say they speak to one of the real estate professionals that listen to the podcast, what I would recommend is that they refer their client to a trusted loan officer. I mean, pretty much every real estate agent out there has loan officers that they work with that are friendly with them, and you know, they'll send them over to that loan officer, and most loan officers will sit down with them, see what their situation is, and not only will they tell them, okay, look, you're, let's say, 2 years from your discharge, we can look at this in a year, we'll be able to get you much more favorable terms, but hey, in the meantime, they'll look at their asset and debt situation, and they'll say, look, if you can do this, this, and this over the next year and save up X amount of dollars, then you're going to be in a much better position to purchase the home you want to buy after that time period. Now, from a real estate professional's perspective, there's one other way of looking at this, and that's sometimes real estate agents run into sellers that want to sell their property, and perhaps they're in the middle of a bankruptcy. And you, while you are restricted in being able to sell assets during a bankruptcy, it's not impossible. And I've walked clients through that process before where they just have to get the permission of the court to sell the asset. So it's not a situation where if a listing agent walks into someone's house to sit down and talk about listing their house, let's say that seller says, oh, hey, by the way, I'm in the middle of a bankruptcy. The listing agent doesn't have to say, hey, there's nothing I can do for you. You know, let me know when it's over. No, the listing agent can still take the listing, work with them, work with their bankruptcy attorney, and get the proper steps taken in order to sell that property with either a short sale or a conventional sale, depending on the circumstances.
Okay, well, that's great. You know, I think the more information that we can provide for our real estate professionals, the better they can serve their clients and build those trusting relationships. And that's really what we're all about. So if I was going to file for bankruptcy, how would I find out more information? And I know, of course, we can contact you, and you'll give your contact information in a moment, in Virginia and D.C., but what about nationwide? Who can we trust?
Well, nationwide, what I've found is don't necessarily go to websites that are, you know, focused on bankruptcy. Look at websites that are just focused on attorneys in general and look at reviews, because there's a couple of websites that are good. Like, I have a profile on a website called avo.com, and that's kind of like the Angie's List for lawyers. And you can go on there. You can search by the locality that you're in. You can search by practice areas. And most of the time, those attorneys will have reviews for them from clients, such as in my situation, I have reviews from clients that have employed me to either file bankruptcy or help them with other legal matters. And also, Avo checks and makes sure that attorneys haven't been disciplined by their local bar association as well. So that way they can have an idea of whether or not this is a reputable professional attorney, or is it someone that regularly gets in trouble with the bar. So I would recommend looking at either Avo or also lawyers.com is another one that's sponsored by, I believe, the company that does Lexis Legal Research. And both of those sites, you can search by practice area and locality and get an idea of where you can look for an attorney in pretty much any jurisdiction across the country. But bankruptcy laws are mostly federal in nature, and so it's going to be very similar from state to state for the most part.
Okay, well, that's good to know. And how do people contact you, and what is the area that you cover for your business?
Well, I'm licensed in both Virginia and Maryland, and I have a colleague that's licensed in D.C. as well, so I can cover the entire D.C. metro area. The best way to get in touch with me is via email, and my email address is rob@robertpopelaw.com. I also have a website at robertpopelaw.com that people can look at and check out, and there's some more information about bankruptcy on that site as well. But the best way to get in touch with me is to go ahead and send me an email, and that way I can explain, you know, I can look at, I can talk to the individual that's emailing me, I can get an idea of what their situation is, and I don't charge for initial consultations. You know, I only charge if someone does want to move forward with filing for bankruptcy, and then it's just an initial deposit, and then they can pay for the rest of it at any time between then and when they file. So I do that. I answer questions for people all the time, and I'm happy to do so in order to help people with either their real estate practice or if they have questions about bankruptcy. So either way, the best way, again, is to email me at rob@robertpopelaw.com, and I will try and respond to emails within 24 hours of receiving them.
Excellent. And you are absolutely our trusted advisor at the Coaching Chick. So we come to you all the time when we have questions or issues that come up. And I always appreciate your professionalism and your responsiveness to our needs.
Well,
so
thank you.
Do you have
guys
any
are
last
a pleasure to work
tips?
With.
Oh, thanks.
Just, you know, if anybody has any questions, focused on the D.C. metro area, by all means, send me an email. If it's in an area of law that I don't personally practice in, then chances are lawyers do know a lot of other lawyers. And if I don't practice in a particular area, then the chances are pretty good that I'll know someone who does, and it's someone that I would trust and can refer them to. So any number of things. I mean, there are areas that I don't practice in. I really don't do criminal work. I don't do domestic relations, but I know attorneys that do in different jurisdictions. So feel free to send me an email, and I will either be able to help them myself, or I'll be able to put them in touch with a trusted attorney who can help them as well.
Excellent. Thank you. And I want to thank you for your time today, and we'll be having you on here again for some other legal matters for real estate professionals and, of course, for everyone else. So thank you very much, and we'll be speaking with you again.
Well, you're very welcome. It's been a pleasure, Ashley. I look forward to being on here again very soon.
Okay. Well, until next time, we will say goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, push the safety bars up and exit the ride.